The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to today's Mad Tech Podcast, our weekly overview of what's making waves in the worlds of media, marketing, and e-commerce. Today, fresh from the Bay Area, California, I'm delighted to be joined by Shiv Gupta, founder of Year of Digital. Shiv, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Very excited for this podcast.
Really good to have you. Thanks very much for joining us. I am also joined by ExchangeWire CSO and founder Kieran O'Kane. Kieran, welcome back. More familiar face than usual at the moment.
John, it's an absolute pleasure to be on here again with you. You're a broadcasting legend that nobody knows about.
Give it time, Kieran. Well, we've got three really interesting stories to get into this week. And the story that seems to keep on giving this year, we're going to start with, which is ad fraud. Advertisers will spend $84 billion on ad fraud this year, a report says. According to a new report from Juniper Research, nearly a quarter of online marketing dollars will go to ad fraud in 2023. The fraud comes at a cost of around $84 billion, or 22% of the $382 billion spent on online advertising. The figures are meant to be even higher for mobile, around 30%. We've heard a lot about ad fraud this year, MFA sites, the rise of ad fraud again. Shiv, big question to start with. How do we put a stop to this? What's needed to stop this happening?
Yeah, this is an existential problem, obviously, for the industry. It's always been around. It seems to be getting worse. I think people like to sit around on podcasts and talk about how bad it is. And then, you know, they go back to their office and worry about other stuff, right? So I think what needs to happen is people need to actually care to fix it. And, you know, it always goes back to the idea of like the incentives in this industry just don't align to like fixing these types of problems, right? Fixing the supply problems, fixing the fraud problem. And if you think about, you know, the entire kind of chain of constituents in the industry, you know, you start with the buyer, you go to the agency, maybe you go to the vendor, and, you know, on the vendor side, you know, the DSP, you kind of collapse the supply chain, or that the programmatic supply chain, DSP, SSP, ad network, exchange, et cetera. None of those players benefit from spending a lot of time and effort on eradicating fraud, right? And so let's go to the advertiser, right? That's where you would think the fraud can be fixed and addressed. If you're a middle manager, you know, marketer at the advertiser, you probably just want to show a good report, right? You want to put a good Excel report in front of your boss. If you're the CMO, you probably want to put a good Excel report in front of your CEO who doesn't understand fraud in the first place, right? They just want to see metrics. And so I think all the way you run up the flagpole from, you know, all the way on the supply side of the ecosystem, then all the way to the advertiser side, up the flagpole, even up to the CMO level, do we really know if they care, right? I think that's the biggest problem. That's always been a big problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you touched on a really interesting point there, which is like the vanity metrics that the industry runs on, and, you know, people just want to impress the person above them. Kieran, how do you feel about this, the ad fraud? How do you feel about the numbers?
$84 billion a year. That's insane. That's an insane number. How do people keep their jobs from losing that kind of money? That's crazy. I don't know. I mean, there was a report there recently about how many sites were being that a typical advertiser was advertising on. It was like something like, I don't know, it was 33,000 sites or something ridiculous like that. Let's be honest, you lads. Like, nobody's going to those sites, right? I'm sure the three of us on this podcast go to a number of sites during a couple of, you know, B2B media sites, including ourselves and others, sports sites, news sites. But you can name them on two hands, like it's 10 sites probably per person. So where is the traffic coming from those other sites? So we do have this big, big problem in the ecosystem, right? I mean, I'm all for like this, for keeping the open web open, but like, would you keep the open web open if you knew that $84 billion was being evaporated because we're buying bot traffic? Like, it's so easy to set up a website right now, right? And basically buy crap traffic and arbitrage via MFA, right? And it's interesting. I don't know who wrote this report. I think it was Jens talking about how DSPs are incentivized to buy MFA traffic because of the metrics, right? Great viewability, great, like, you know, CTR. It's all bullshit. Like, it's not real. But then you get
down. I will say, the other day I was doom scrolling on Twitter or something.
Yeah.
And I saw a headline that said, these people drilled the deepest hole into the crust of the earth.
Yeah.
And read about what happened. I clicked on it. And I spent a solid 5 minutes on that site reading about the deepest hole drilled ever in the earth. And I knew it was MFA. I knew it. There was ads everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still went and read the whole thing.
Yeah.
I read the whole thing. I thought it was good. I thought it was good MFA. I was sitting there thinking about it. I was like, this is well done MFA. And like, is it fair for this publisher to be eradicated by everything that is happening right now? Anyways, sorry, I'm going on a tangent.
That's a fair point, actually, because I actually will admit to something as well. I basically got it in a sort of rabbit hole of cancelled Hollywood stars, like, you know.
Yes.
And it was literally 100 pages. And I was quite content to go around. My mind has become used to this, that I can navigate, I find the next button. And maybe right, the mousetrap is there. Like, well, we are talking about two different things, right? That in fairness to probably those MFA sites, they probably have quite a lot of unique traffic, like.
Sure.
But then there's sites out there like Shakespeare poetry sites, and, you know, and we're going to have like a deluge of crap from synthetic media, like just basically, you know, scrape pages and then get an AI bot to kind of like spit out an article and then optimize it for Google or whoever it might be, or buy traffic and arbitrage it that way, like using bot traffic. It's as you say, existential is the appropriate word here. Like, I think advertisers are starting to really think about, I mean, and then this goes beyond the media part of the business. The CFO is sitting there going, we are wasting so much money. I think that's where it becomes a problem, right? Because we are wasting money, right? We are wasting billions of money. And I like, and probably a lot of the 84 is huge CPG brands, like, that spend big money on digital advertising every year.
Yeah, and I think that's where the rubber has to meet the road, right? It's like, it can't be, even at the CMO level, again, like the CMO is not necessarily incentivized to tell the real story. And so I think the rubber needs to meet the road where it's like, okay, the CFO is looking at marketing. The CEO is looking at the board of these companies. They're looking at the marketing. The problem is they're not knowledgeable enough to tell what is real and what is not, right? And so I think, you know, obviously this is my slant on the whole industry, but like, I think there's a ton of education that's needed at those levels of these organizations. Like the CFO, the CEO, the board needs to be educated about how the space works, so the CMO doesn't get in front of the board and just present a deck that says, oh, check out all these awesome metrics that you and I, John, you, me, Kieran here, we all know are bullshit, right?
Yeah. Do you think there's a new... I mean, I suppose that ad fraud category, ad fraud detection category in ad tech's been big, but do you think it's going to get bigger? I got an email today from someone who said it's going to grow, especially on the back of these reports. The likes of Human and others, like, is that category going to grow exponentially now because it's become such a problem?
You know, I'm going to go back to incentives. Like, the industry doesn't really have a lot of incentive to spend more money on those things until the metrics line up, right? Until the metrics matter, right? If I'm a marketer and I'm like, okay, I got $100 million to spend, I'm spending as much as possible on working media, right? To me, that's the best way to eradicate the BS. It's, okay, I'm going to go find clean supply paths. I'm going to buy through private deals. I'm going to buy direct to pub. Like, I'm going to do those things before I spend a ton of money on brand safety, on brand verification, on fraud detection, right? Programmatic is only valuable if you don't have to dump a bunch of extra money into making sure it is valuable, right?
Yeah.
And so is the question that the money will go towards fraud detection, or is the question that marketers are going to just say, I'm not dealing with OpenRTB and open web anymore. I'm just putting money into walled gardens and direct pub buys and private deals.
Curation, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Does,
and I would gravitate more that way.
That's likely to cut out quite a lot of this, though. If you clean up the supply path, it's probably going to kind of net out that a lot of that ad fraud starts to disappear.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's like, I think a marketer needs to kind of sit down and think about what's important to them, right? And I think, again, it goes back to the metrics. Like, marketers, if they're doing a good job, need to identify like what's valuable. Clicks, probably not valuable, right? Even conversions, the way we track conversions in this industry, last click, multi-touch, a lot of it's just BS, right? I think I heard Dave Morgan on a pod recently with Ari Paparo on Marketecture, and he said probably my favorite quote of the year in the industry, which was, if you add up everyone's attribution in our industry, the GDP will go up by 10x. Right. And I was like, that's hilarious. That is so spot on. And so, yeah, I think people need to like get to the right metrics first before any of this stuff gets cleaned up, you know?
Yeah.
You're not brands.
Exactly. Cool. Well, moving on to our second story, and Meta's Instagram and Facebook are set to charge EU users for an ad-free service. Meta Platforms is looking to introduce an ad-free subscription plan for Instagram and Facebook users in Europe. People familiar with the matter have said on Tuesday, a €10 per month plan seems a likely approach and could be bought in over the coming months. Kieran, this is something that we talk about quite a bit. Will users accept this and pay for an ad-free service?
No, they won't. Social media is dead, hey. Let's be honest here. What is Instagram except for, you know, ads and influencers? Like, nobody's posting any crap there anymore, right? So, I mean, everything's gone sort of into WhatsApp or Telegram or whatever messaging app. And to be honest, I hope Meta's listening to this because it's going to go straight to the board, Zuckerberg. Zucker, if you listen to this, I am paying for WhatsApp. I'll go back to text message. I'll go back to my own Nokia phone and just have text message and phone calls. And people like me, they'll text me or if they'll call me. I think that's where we're going, hey. I mean, the thing is about this, you still have to have an opt-in, right? Like, they can't have a blanket, we're going to use your data. You know, like, they can't do that, right? So there's a bunch of stuff around this. It's kind of forcing people into paying for it. There's the GDPR law in Europe is quite weird, is that you can't force people to pay for a service, right? And I think the Irish, because I think the Irish data organization is in charge of Facebook because it's located in Dublin. I can't remember what it is. Irish data privacy overlords. And they tend to drag their heels because they don't want to give any of the big taxpayers in corporation taxpayers in Ireland any real grief, because our entire economy, the Irish economy, is dependent on this corporation tax from about six companies, including Meta. So that's a little side point there. Will this work? I just don't. People just can't keep paying for stuff, man. It's like, you know, and I suppose that was the Faustian bargain, is that you give up your data for free stuff, but then at the end of the day, then you become the product, right? So maybe we just go back to text messaging. Maybe that's the future. I hope so. And people just go meet each other in pubs and bars. And actually start having relationships with each other, like, you know, instead of texting each other or, you know, Instagramming how great they look on the beach or look at this new fucking handbag. I don't care. Nobody cares. Go hey, have
Kieran,
a beer.
hey, Kieran. Yeah. I hate to say this to you, man, but like you're living in a little bit of like a idealist. Sound like a little bit of a crotchety old man type of thing.
Hey, listen, do not give up on the kids. The kids are thinking like me already. Hey, I'm telling you, yeah. Everybody's going dark.
I got a 20 year old living in my, not my child. I have a 20 year old living in my house. Long story. We'll get into it another time. He's always on. He's always on TikTok. Like he literally is married to TikTok. So I agree with you. While I'd love for the future of humanity to be, let's get together at the pub and talk to each other as people, I don't think that's where we're going, unfortunately. The thing is, I think you bring up a really good point, which is who is going to pay, right? Will people pay, and what will they pay, and what does that mean for everything? What does that mean for technology? What does that mean for the ad industry, obviously? So here's kind of my thought on this is like, I don't think a lot of people will pay. Right. I believe, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of these platforms, they think they're sticky enough. And I think some of them are, right? Like Instagram's very sticky. I think TikTok can be very sticky. And so, listen, I think there's a world in which they can get some people to pay. I don't think they can get a lot of people to pay. And I think one of the mistakes that they're making is they're kind of viewing their content platform as connected TV, right? So they're like, oh, Disney Plus is charging, Netflix is charging, why can't we? The problem is it's a very different type of content, right? Like users, first of all, users on television are way more in tune with ad load than they are on social media, right? If I'm sitting there watching a 30-minute program and I got to watch 3 minutes of ads, I think about that. I think about my time spent against that. Whereas if I'm scrolling, right, on a social feed, my ability to scroll past the advertising is way quicker. And if I want to tune it out, I can tune it out, right? So then all of a sudden the value of removing those ads is inherently different between TV and social. And so I think that's one of the mistakes that's being made by some of these platforms. Now, the other thing I think to think about, which is really interesting, is, you know, social media companies, everybody really talks about like ARPU, right? Average revenue per user as a key metric for success. And I was like looking at some of the data in preparation for the pod. And, you know, I'd say most of the social media companies are somewhere between like $1 to $10 ARPU. Okay. Now, if you think about what they want to charge on a subscription basis, 10 bucks maybe. What can they charge? I don't think they can charge a lot. Maybe $5, $3. Like, I don't think they're going to end up charging 10 bucks and get to any kind of critical mass, right? Mm. So if you take two ideas here, one is how many people are actually going to pay that are net new? Very few, right? If I'm not on Facebook because I don't like Facebook and I don't want to spend time on social media, all of a sudden an ad-free tier is not going to get me to sign up, right? So the only people that they're going to be getting are existing users that are just like, oh, I'd prefer a version of this without ads. I'll pay $5 a month. I'll pay $8 a month. And then the equation is no longer, am I adding net new revenue to the business? It's, oh, I'm moving revenue from here to there, right? And the question then becomes, is, am I increasing the ARPU? Right? Because the ads ARPU is already pretty high, $5, $6, $7, $8, $10. So I have to be able to get significantly more than that on a subscription basis in order to actually grow revenue as a business. And that's not a sure shot, right? The other thing is there's churn. Yeah, I think subscription will have higher churn than people that just use it for free, right? So yeah. LTV, the lifetime value of it changes. So I think these are some of the things that will probably like doom this idea of paid social media. I think there's some other models that should be deployed. We could talk about that in a second. But yeah,
I genuinely don't think that these ad funded models work anymore in Europe. Because it's dependent on using, you know, personalized data to target you, which now is illegal unless you've explicitly opted into it, regardless. Even if they go to a subscription model, you could force them. Well, you have to keep this open, right? So I think like you're in this, and I think this could be quite interesting. Like there's a second and third order effect here, right? That if the kids aren't using these platforms, they will migrate to somewhere else. And ironically, they may go back to stuff like, you know, TV. They might end up watching more TV, right? They might actually do more social stuff. I think this is I have no sympathy for Meta and TikTok. I genuinely don't like either of those companies. Not dislike them. I just don't like what they're doing to people. Like TikTok's probably a bit different because it's more of a it's more like the future. It's like bubblegum TV. It's like scroll, scroll, scroll. It's like someone watching TV, but not TV, if you know what I mean. Like you're right about the ad load. Meta obviously has a very bad and checkered history, like, but I think it gets harder for these companies to do business here, like. And you're right. There's a lot of people who are there's inflation in this part of the world. It's cost of living crisis. Can you really outlay $110 or £110 a year or €110 to kind of just be on a platform that you used to get for free, where most of the kids now are in WhatsApp groups or Telegram groups, just chatting to each other, right? Like Snap or whatever they're using, right? Closed groups. And like, I don't know about you guys, but like most of my friends and family are in these groups, and you kind of, you communicate that way, right? I don't like a post on LinkedIn because it's professional, right? It's different. Rarely, I think X is diseased at the minute. I think it's on its last legs. Especially this is really Palestinian thing. Like I think like the misinformation is going to kill it in Europe. I think the EU will either like shut it off or they will find it into oblivion, basically. I think this represents a shift in consumption habits. I know that I totally agree with you. I've seen the kids addicted to TikTok, but like, it only takes an invasion of Taiwan or a fine by the EU to turn it completely off in Europe, and the kids will cry for a couple of weeks. They'll get over it. They'll find something else. They're kids. They're grand. They'll find something like, oh my God. Like that scene from The Simpsons where they discover the outside and the grass is playing like in football fields and there's like Mozart's playing in the background and they realize they can all play and not watch TV. I hope that does happen actually. But
no, it ain't happening.
It is. It might not happen in the US, but it's going to happen here. The Europeans are sort of funneling people down this way.
Now, so you know what's interesting is, I think what you may about him, but Professor Scott Galloway, I think, had an interesting point on a recent podcast that he did, which was like, I think they need to get creative. If they want to make money outside of ads, I think they got to get more creative about it as opposed to just like, oh, here's an ad-free tier. And I think like his idea is like they should be charging the people with massive reach a lot of money, right? So if I'm like Katy Perry – or sorry, what's her name? Taylor Swift, right? Everybody loves Taylor Swift. She's got a massive platform on these social media platforms. She's got hundreds of millions of users and viewers. She monetizes it. It's valuable to her, right? If Twitter all of a sudden was like, hey, you have to pay $10 per month for every million viewers you have or every – 100,000 viewers you have. Mm. And for Taylor Swift, that's a drop in the bucket. And it actually is still, it's very valuable for her, right? She monetizes that. That could be interesting. Now, it flips the model, right? They want Taylor Swift.
It's more
there.
Like B2B then. It's more like a B2B model because you're charging like power users and brands and all the rest of it a fee to basically broadcast their audience, right? So like, in fairness, I did hear him talk about that years ago when he was, before Musk took over Twitter, he was kind of putting that there as a potential model. And I thought that was a good, like, it made sense because then you've got like really good, strong recurring revenue across the board. Like, but you're only charging those people who have huge reach, like, you know, all the news organizations, personalities, and when you accumulate all that up, you might have 100,000, 200,000. You've got quite a few. You could have a $2-4 billion business recurring revenue. And that's not a bad business. I think you're right. But I just think they're all addicted to ad money. It's too easy for them. It's too hard for them to move on. It's too easy money. It's easy money for the minute, but it might have to work in Europe. They're going to have to think about something creative because that model just won't work here.
Yeah. And, you know, it is interesting, I think, to think about alternative. Like if we are wrong, right? And let's say it sticks. Let's say it sticks and people start paying for this stuff. I think it's interesting to think about how it affects advertising, right? So, you know, what would happen in that scenario? Well, all of a sudden these platforms are moving away from ads. Less supply.
More money for us. More money for old school websites. The CPMs go off the, like,
that's
it's
right.
Party time in ad tech.
That's right. Yeah. Like media gets more scarce. Supply gets more scarce. Demand goes up. Pricing goes up. It's interesting to think about, like, does performance go down or not because quality has improved? Also, it's important, I think, to think about when they start charging, let's say it works and they get kind of critical mass, the people that are seeing the ads, this sounds terrible, but they are less desirable, right? Because they have less disposable income to pay for these platforms. So all of a sudden, the quality of people you're running ads towards is lower. And does that hurt performance? I think it's interesting to think about those things as a service or a content platform moves from fully ad supported to like a hybrid model, how that impacts the audience that you're reaching.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. We are definitely in the rabbit hole of this stuff. Hey?
We have. We've gone straight down deep into that one. I'm going to move us along to our last story for this week. And it's finally happening. Microsoft is planning to complete its $68.7 billion proposed acquisition of Activision Blizzard next week. The Verge has been told that the company has its sights set on Friday, October the 13th as the closing date, so tomorrow or today when you're listening. That date still depends on the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, the regulator that blocked the deal earlier this year. It's been a long time coming. There's been a lot of wrangling about this deal. Ciarán, will the deal be worth it for Microsoft?
Yeah, of course it will. Activision Blizzard, regardless of all the sort of like console gaming, they have a massive footprint in mobile gaming, casual gaming, which is something Microsoft want. It's, you know, like just following on for the last discussion, where are those ad dollars going to go if some of these social media sort of platforms go the subscription route or have to close down because they're not applying to regulations? It could go into gaming, right? Gaming is hugely popular globally. I would say under-monetized by a lot of brands who still can't get their head around why people play games. You talk about upper funnel. Why spend so much money on TV when gaming is probably a brilliant place for brands to build brand equity, especially with like young men, young women. I think this is a smart move by Microsoft. They're building out it's the company that never was in ad tech, but is ad tech, if you know what I mean. Like, it's got so many weapons in the space. I think this just adds to their armory of what they can offer brands and agencies. So I think it's a good move for them. And if this deal happened, a lot of time spent on this sort of blocking Microsoft, all they're going to own. But really, I don't think it makes a hell of a lot of a difference. Like, they kind of agreed over what the console stuff would be and that they wouldn't encroach on, you know, on the sort of ownership or specific titles, and they're not going to like take away anything for Sony, etc. So I think the deal really here is the mobile gaming piece. Does that give Microsoft an unhealthy monopoly in that space? No, it doesn't. It just gives them a tip in the ocean. I mean, the mobile gaming space is absolutely massive and a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I think on a podcast that we've done before, Lindsay Rountree, our COO, said, you know, all the fuss is about Call of Duty, but the jewel is Candy Crush.
Bubble Girl and all the rest of them. Is it Bubble Girl?
I think the TV angle of this is really interesting, right? So I agree with you guys. The casual gaming, the mobile piece is huge. No argument there. I think as Microsoft has ambitions to become one of the bigger ad companies in the space, you know, they're trying to think about how we can, I think, two things, right? How we can A, get into the living room, right? How we can get on the television set in a way that's different and novel. And then how can we string together addressability and identity, right? Unlike some of these other companies, just from a differentiated place, right? And so they're sitting there looking at, okay, who's above us in the pecking order? It's Amazon, it's Google, right? And what are they doing to get on the TV, in the living room? Well, they've got YouTube, they've got Amazon Prime Video. Cool. Well, we've got Xbox. And that's really interesting and valuable. What if we double down on Xbox, right? And that can be our way into the living room, again, in a meaningfully differentiated way. I think that's fascinating, right? I think if you think about, you know, I always like to say, like, how did any one of these companies become huge in advertising? Well, they had kind of a core, massive consumer-facing asset that they figured out how to monetize, right? So Google did that with search. Amazon did that with retail. Microsoft has a lot of interesting kind of fingers in a lot of places. I think B2B, they have LinkedIn, a huge LinkedIn and Outlook and all the Microsoft Office suite. I think they have a massive kind of opportunity there, but I think they have a massive opportunity that they see in gaming, right? Can we own gaming? Google and Amazon have nothing in gaming, and we think gaming is a rising tide. So that's smart, right? Like we can build an ad business on top of that, maybe marry that with B2B, find a unique way into the living room, string together addressability and identity in a way that these platforms just don't have, right? So, I think Microsoft's probably thinking along those lines. And then, you know, again, having those apps on phones gives them more power and gives them an ability to string together addressability in ways that, again, the other companies just can't do, right? So I just think they're trying to take a little bit of a novel approach given their competition and say, listen, they're going in this direction. We're going to just come at it from a little bit of a different direction so we can be number three, right? They want to be number three within the next 5 to 10 years in advertising. And I think they can be if they play some of these cards right. Right. And I think it's interesting also to think about who they're up against. Apple wants to be number three as well. Right. So it's like, okay, how's Apple getting onto the living room TV? Well, maybe they're building a TV, but then also it's Apple TV Plus. Right. So all these guys are just building these streaming services. Let's just go at it from the Xbox angle. Right. I think it's going to be interesting to see how like the big tech companies, how it all kind of reworks itself in the top five list within the next 5 to 10 years. I think you're going to see Microsoft and Apple kind of move up slowly and steadily. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think, you know, in that you've summed up quite well, Shiv, as well, just exactly why the UK's Competition and Markets Authority were looking into this deal so closely. Kieran, do you think that CMA were right to drag this out this long? And yeah, do you think that it's ultimately right that it's being allowed to happen?
They were right to question the deal in the first place, I suppose. That's a good sort of process involved around M&A. So, like, you know, asking the hard questions, looking 5 to 10 years down, thinking, I mean, I doubt they have the same sort of insight that Shiv has here in terms of, like, you know, knitting all those pieces together, like, particularly around the upper funnel stuff. Like, cause, I mean, I think the TV route is smart. I think a lot of these sort of bodies want to justify their existence and have to kind of like, you know, throw their toys out of the cot now and again over big deals.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think CMA's angle was very much focused on you can have the platform, which is Xbox, and also be the largest distributor of the content on the platform. Right. Yeah. That because if you then lock those two things together, you are a monopoly, right? It's the idea of like owning the marketplace and selling all the goods within the marketplace and squashing
Sounds familiar.
Right. There's a bunch of lawsuits going on right now. Amazon obviously, FTC here in the US, Google obviously with search. That's always kind of the big kind of argument for antitrust. Like you can't own the platform, the marketplace, and also be the biggest seller of the products in the marketplace. That is anti-competitive. So I think that's the CMA probably honestly didn't even get into the advertising implications of this whole thing.
No, I mean, the EU actually let it go. Right? They've got the Digital Marketing Act, which is Markets Act, sorry, DMA, which basically is now, you know, banging the sort of, what they call it, gateway companies to rights, like, and they can't really do anything untoward without being absolutely fined out of existence, or they have to have ceased business. I think there's actually a statement that they'll be asked to cease business for 30 days. That's part of the, so they're not even going to fine them. They're going to say, you have made several infractions, you haven't addressed them, we're shutting you down for 30 days. I mean, that's one way to get like companies to get their shit together, because 30 days of lost revenue in Europe would be significant enough, like, you know, and it would continue until it's not even 30 days after it is to review it. And then they look and they can continue the ban. Like, so
my question is, what happens during those 30 days? Like, does my key card get shut off? Like, can I not go into the office? Are they not allowed to run any ads? Like, you're saying they're shutting down Activision Blizzard for 30 days?
No.
Like, is no one allowed to play video games for 30 days? Like,
probably,
how does this work?
Or just shut down the Amazon.com site, redirect it
exchangewire.com.
we'll take care of all your e-commerce needs.
I love it. Imagine
the Amazon traffic is redirected to our website. Jeez. Our CTO, his head would blow up. Like, it'd be just insane.
Yeah, you guys would have to spin up a whole sponsored ads business pretty quickly in order to make it work.
It's ready, Shiv. It's ready.
We're prepared. Bring on the traffic. That's all we have time for the news. Shiv, I want to take a bit of time to discuss your work at U of Digital. There was a lovely intro on your website that says that you saw that gatekeepers were hoarding the knowledge behind fancy titles and complicated lingo, and, you know, education's your thing. So tell us a little bit about that inspiration and how everything's going at U of Digital.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I started U of Digital in 2018. You know, I started it for a bunch of reasons, but that I think that line is pretty apt. I think, you know, I think our industry kind of thrives on overcomplicating things, right? Like product marketers everywhere are thinking about, hey, what's the new acronym I can come up with to confuse the market and make them think we're doing really smart stuff when it's just another ad network or it's just another DSP, right? And so I think, you know, what that does is it creates a lot of downstream negative impact on people, on companies. I think it prevents the industry from making tons of progress. Like, you know, you guys are in the media. I think you guys probably talk to some of the smarter people in the space that kind of can tell some of these things apart. But the vast majority of the people in the industry are like trying to do their job and kind of getting a lot of stuff gets shoved on them all the time. And they are as confused as ever. And in order for people to do their jobs better and help their companies kind of drive better outcomes, we have to level the playing field, right? We have to get people to understand what's real, what's not. And I think that helps the industry overall make a lot of progress in terms of, you know, again, better outcomes for companies, more kind of like clear and concise vision and clear and concise kind of like product marketing about what they're actually doing versus what they are not doing. I think it accelerates deal making, right? Like, you can't imagine how many times I've been in a scenario where I've come to a table to talk to somebody that I may make a deal with, right? I was in sales for a long time in biz dev. And the deal doesn't get done because people on opposite sides of the table are talking a different language, right? You know, and you can kind of bring this down to very specific examples. People that have traditionally been in ad tech can't talk MarTech, right? People that have traditionally been in programmatic, you know, or, you know, in DSP land, they can't necessarily talk about the SSP stuff or the supply stuff. You know, and there's today, there's a lot of convergence of all these things, right? Ad tech, MarTech, cloud and ad tech, social and display. You know, you go down the list, CTV and traditional media. There's so much convergence right now. It's important for people more than ever to have knowledge outside of their little bubble and their experience. And there's no easy and clear way to learn about these things, right? Like, it's not by, you know, just reading. Sorry, it's not by reading the trades all day long. That's not really how you can learn. It helps, but it's like it's not a structured way of learning. It's not necessarily by just going to every conference, right, and listening to every panel. And so we want to fill that gap. We want to help people learn. We want to help people kind of accelerate their careers, drive better outcomes for their companies, and we want to grease the wheels of the entire industry in that effort, right? So that's a little bit about us. You know, we provide training and education to tons of companies in the space, on the sell side, on the tech side, on the vendor side, on the agency side, on the marketer side. And what we've realized, it's really exciting, there's actually tons of demand for this, right? There's a ton of need, there's a ton of demand. So I'm glad to say that we're doing well, we're growing, and we're just, you know, we're just trying to do the good work. So
how do you keep abreast of all this stuff, Shiv? I mean, there's so much information flying around the space. Mm-hmm. Real information and misinformation, if you will. Like, how do you sort of like separate out what's real and what's not real?
Yeah, I think, you know, I ran into this problem pretty early into running the business of like, oh, okay, we have to run a training on in-game advertising. I don't know jack shit about that. I'm not the guy, right? Oh, but you know what? I know somebody who is the guy. I know somebody who's been doing this for 10 years in their career. And if I ask that person like, hey, forget about your company for a minute. Don't do a pitch. Can you come in and be a teacher, right? Can you come in and help teach some people that have a need for the things in your brain? Can we make that work? And so we kind of stumbled into this model a couple of years into running the company of just like, let's find the smartest people in these different areas. Let's detach them from their companies, right? So let's work with them as thought leaders, as individuals, and get them to come in and teach. Listen, people love teaching. People love getting up on a stage and saying, oh my God, can I make some people smart? People love the idea of being a professor nowadays, right? So, and there's a lot of value in doing that in so many different aspects of like their career, their personal branding, you know, how they want to grow as an individual. And so we've curated basically a group of experts across the industry. We have over 200 experts in our expert network. And you tell me a topic in digital marketing and advertising, we've got somebody that lives, breathes, and eats that topic for their career, right? So they can come in as an instructor and teach about that topic and answer any questions that could come up in their sleep, right? So that's how we scale knowledge to different nooks and crannies of the industry. It's the experts that are actually doing the work on the front lines.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, that's all we've got time for, but Shiv, real pleasure to have you today and good luck with everything at Youth Digital. Sounds like, you know, you know what's needed in the industry. Great that the experts are out there to really help people cut through the titles, the acronyms that we rely on. So best of luck with everything.
Hey, thanks guys. This was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks as always, Kieran.
That was great. Thanks.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time on the MedTech Podcast.